What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
Hey, I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live at Facebook. We're live at YouTube. We're live on Twitch. We're live on Twitter. Maybe you're listening to us later at Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your audio podcast. It's all good. And we are very DC representing today, Pete. We're both wearing the black shirts with the DC logos on it.
Yeah. We're up in the DC, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Washington, DC.
What?
Yeah, no. It's my favorite place to visit. Cherry Blossom Festival.
Oh, you love a good cherry blossom. Government.
I was there. Didn't I see you there? There was that day, January 6th. We were both there.
Don't even try it. No, sir. I was not there. Yeah. Don't try to put me in that. No.
Okay. Well, no. There's a lot of questions I have, and I guess not a lot of answers. One of the questions I do have the answer to, though, is where's Justin? Hopefully, he's going to join us later in the show.
He's scouting a location because he's a line producer. That's how things work in the TV world.
He's not a line producer, but he is out scouting a location right now. Hopefully, he'll be able to join us later. If not, we're going to make fun of him a lot. So there you go.
Hey.
Regardless, we have a bunch of great guests for you. Let's bring two of them in first. They are the folks behind the book Spiderweb. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Mose and Patrick Hernandez.
Hey, welcome,
everyone.
Welcome to the show. Excited to have you here. Excited to talk about this book. Now, Jeff, you're the writer and artist, and Patrick, you are the letterer and one other credit that I'm forgetting.
Yeah, I'm the, well, as it's in the book, it's actually production.
Production.
You had to look.
Yes, important. You're always doing a good job when you have to check what your job is. Why don't we talk about the book, though? This is a twisty, very interesting crime thriller that takes a little bit of a documentary approach to it, which I found pretty fascinating, particularly for a comic book. Jeff, where did the idea to approach it this way start?
This started before the pandemic. I was I had an idea for the story I wanted to do, and I was doing research. I'd go and talk with a criminal defense lawyer friend of mine. Ooh. I couldn't figure out how to put the story all together. So then I just sat on it for a good long while. And then during the pandemic, when everything was not really happening, I figured, like, it's time to get this book put together. And I ended up just seeing a documentary on Netflix one night, and it's like, that's it. That's how I got to set it up, is doing the documentary sort of style.
Oh, nice.
Well, talk me through this a little bit, because I do think it works in the book, so I'm not saying this derogatorily at all, but usually you wouldn't think that sort of static, sort of talking head type thing would necessarily lend itself to the comic book format. So what challenges were there when you were putting it together in terms of the structure of the book?
Well, when I first started thinking about it, I was thinking maybe like I'll use like a non-linear narrative. And then I figured, like, I don't know if I want to do that. Then I thought, like, do I want to do like a courtroom scene? I don't know if you've ever been to a courtroom. They only look interesting in movies. A real courtroom has nothing in it aside from a desk and chairs in the bar. So the challenge was in just trying to make it visually interesting, in terms of having a lot of talking heads telling you things.
So what then, just to take it a step further then, yes, that's the challenge, but how did you approach that then? How did you make it visually interesting?
Well, when I started writing the book, I just had a feeling of how I wanted to do it. I was seeing it in my head, and then it was just a matter of getting it on paper. Because when I think about it, I'm thinking about how I'm moving my camera around for all my storytelling to make the story really try and pop, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The other thing that you do here that we're getting a little bit of a sense of if you're watching the live show is it jumps pretty rapidly through various decades. That's a big scope for this sort of story. Was there any thought about focusing it in on a smaller era, or was that part of the appeal to you to jump through the decades?
Oh, that was definitely part of the appeal. I wanted to just tell a tale over time of just how bad a single incident can make all the fallout. And I thought the best way to do that was to just go through time and show people getting older, situations getting worse and worse.
Yeah, I really like the way we kind of you started off by kind of like breaking it down how like people will kind of change stories just through their own bias and their own perception of reality. And then we kind of have this like cool interview style. And then what's also a fun layer is the artist is doing kind of like famous people's faces.
Well,
It's
the artist
there's
is Jeff, just to
yeah
be clear.
sure, yeah.
yeah well I mean during the pandemic it was very hard to try and get somebody to come over and do some life modeling. Use Google.
Well, it's kind of a nice fun layer, you know. And it's like, oh man, that's the guy from Happy Days. So it's just
Guy
a
from Happy Days? You're talking
yeah.
about Ron Howard, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about old
Okay.
Ronnie Howe.
All right.
It's just kind of a nice additional layer when you're reading it. That's fun treats. I also really love the black and white style. It kind of fits the noir aspect of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. We were playing with the idea of doing color, but then I started to figure out that that was going to make for a very hefty cover price. So just kind of said, like, as much as I'd like to do it, it's just not in the cards right now.
Cool.
Patrick, talk to us a little bit about your role. When did you end up joining the project?
Well, actually, I started initially, I was going to color the graphic novel, and I did some pages. And Jeff really liked my work. Then, as Jeff said, it moved to a black and white graphic novel instead. Then I talked about a bit of my other projects. I also do lettering. I do pencils, inking, coloring, and lettering. And well, I lettered some pages, and it grew from there. And it was quite interesting. I enjoyed it a lot to work on this project because it's dialogue heavy. It has a lot of scenes, well, as you said, talking heads. And as a letter, you have to take that into consideration because if there are several text balloons and you start to get, as a reader, overwhelmed by the amount of text, it's going to be an obstacle for the way you read it. So I had to consider that and spread as much as possible all the text in a way that it felt natural, that it felt organic for each character whenever they were speaking.
Well, you did a great job because I hate when I open up a comic book and I'm like, what is this, a novel? Come on over here. Nobody talks in giant monologues all the time. So you did a great job of breaking it up and not having it feel, even though there is a lot of dialogue, having it not feel too overwhelming.
Yeah, thank you. And I also took that into consideration in terms of the font size, because I remember even as a kid, there were some pages of comic books that the font size changed with no reason at all. I mean, it looked like they were whispering and they were just talking, and so it was like, what was that? So now, as a letterer, I have to be careful about those kinds of things. So I want to use a size that could be used whenever the panel needed a lot of text to be placed and not cover any of the artwork in a way that it will be, well, it would affect in a bad way the way you appreciate the art.
Yeah.
And that's also the reason why I wanted to really work with Patrick was when I was looking at his stuff, he had a really good eye for storytelling and page layout.
Great. Yeah, it's super important.
I do want to get back to the celebrity lookalikes thing, though. Were you worried at all in terms of getting likeness rights or anything, or was it more feeling like it was falling under parody laws or whatever you want to call it?
That's funny. I was just talking with this to Jimmy Palmiotti a couple of weeks
Oh,
ago.
yeah. That guy's fun.
We were talking about process, and I was saying because he saw like on the cover, like, oh, you got Michael Rapaport. I'm like, you're damn right, I got Michael Rapaport. And he was saying like, yeah, sometimes, especially like I said, during the pandemic, you just got to use what is available.
Was there, this is such a silly question, but is there a favorite actor that you have that you're really excited to include in the art in particular?
That's why I brought up Michael Rapaport first.
Okay, there you go. Not the guy from Happy Days, as I call him?
No, I mean, when I was trying to visually figure out my characters, I was just doing searches about people that had interesting faces. I didn't exactly want anybody to be pretty or handsome. I just want them to have an interesting face.
Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about the release of this book? I believe it's independently published and released. So what has that experience been like?
It's always an experience, and it's different with every book. I mean, thankfully, like when I brought Patrick on, I told him, like, I want this to be our book. And one of the things that Patrick did is he actually lined up our distribution for nationwide. The book was published by a great little printer called Comics Wellspring. It doesn't warp. The material is very solid, very high quality paper. So it's actually been a blessing.
That's great.
Well, Patrick, could you talk about that a little bit, since that falls more under your purview? What was involved in getting distribution for the book?
Sure. Well, my oldest job in terms of getting out of college and started working professionally is at Darkslinger Comics and the artist of Minslingers. It's a comic book that kind of reunites every character from the publisher into a family-friendly book. Well, my editor and friend, Adam Watson, also started a distribution company called Comics Mainstream some time ago. And I talked to him about what I was doing with this book, and he told me to get him and Jeff in touch so they could, well, see what would come up there. Mm. And they did talk, and I think everything went great.
Excellent. Well, if somebody wanted to pick up this book, where can they check it out?
Good question. It is to be available on comicswellspring.com in just a few days.
All right.
And I'm also making the rounds through comic conventions around the country. So look for me in like 7 different cities.
What's coming up next? What's the next venue that people can check you out at?
I just got confirmation that I'll be at Savannah Comic Con.
Ooh, nice.
I just did all my paperwork. I'll be appearing at MICE in Boston. And there's a couple other things in the wings. I just got to finish up the paperwork.
Awesome.
Doing a little traveling.
Well, Jeff, Patrick, congratulations on the book.
It's
very cool, really fascinating to read, and good luck.
It's a great read.
For people to check it out.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great night.
Cheers.
All right. And Pete, I know you were wondering about this. When he said he's going to be at MICE, that's actually like the creature MICE. Like they host a whole comic convention.
Oh, I thought it was one of those inflatable rats that you see out in the
Scabby?
Street.
Scabby? Scabby the rat? Scabbers? Yeah. Is that? I don't remember what it is.
Scabatron?
Scabatron? No, Scabatron is in Transformers Rise of the Beasts. One of them turns into the Scabby rat because he's like, you guys, we gotta form a union of Transformers, of Autobots to fight the Decepticons.
Sounds like a good idea.
Thank you. I auditioned for the voice and I didn't get it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
All right, listen, why don't we bring in our second guest here?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
No, you don't want to keep talking about
it. No, I really don't. Okay. Don't want to do that.
All I'm saying is we support the writers, okay? We support the writers.
Yeah, we do, but not in a weird, not in a weird way.
WGA strong.
Oh my God, you're the worst.
Sounds like I'm being sarcastic and dope.
It does. It does.
I really do.
Against what we're trying to do. So far, you've said you're against writers, and you were there on the, you know, the big. I can't even remember the date.
You can't. Oh, you can't remember. Oh, I don't know. What date is it?
I don't remember.
Sometime in January, like the 6th. I don't even remember. I don't know where I was.
Hey, maybe I was in
Virginia or Maryland. Honestly, who could say? Why don't we bring in our next guest? He is the writer of Lucifer Licorice, a new book that is crowdfunding right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Russell Dualty.
Hey!
What's up again? How are you
Good
guys?
To see you again. Welcome back to the show.
Love the art you have behind you. Absolutely fantastic.
Thanks. That's all really my art. All my art and all my books and all my books are on my arm because I'm very vain.
Oh, well.
No, I love it, though. It's cute.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And
this
so
is
your
actually
book.
The two main characters.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Right there.
Well, talk us through this. This is up on Kickstarter now, Lucifer Licorice number one. Currently, just to read it off, let's see if it gets big bumped by the end of the show. We're basically doing a telethon here. You have 13 days to go. Your goal is 7,500, and you are most of the way there. You're at 4,835, so nice. Still a little way to go, but doing pretty well, I think, this far.
Yeah, we did really good that first week, and then you have that like hit a brick wall on Sunday, mm-hmm. and we've kind of been we actually inched back a little bit, and hopefully we're gonna shoot back forward. But yeah Lucifer Licorice is about a spoiled brat prince who's turned into a licorice monster by a candy witch and has to mm-hmm. learn to stop being so bitter so he can turn back into his old body and quit being chased by things like bungle bums and things. So it's like Adventure Time, regular show, Summer Camp Island. Like, if you like weird animated shows, like, that's very much the vibe of this thing. And it's mm-hmm. very, very weird. I usually do weird books that are more in the bloody, terrifying, action-packed vein. And this is very much the weird book in the animated, wholesome,
adorable.
All ages vein.
Yeah.
Well, and so the art is by Angela, oh my gosh, I made it too small.
Bassett.
Oddling, there we go. Yes, it is adorable for anybody who's listening to the podcast. It is very Adventure Time, I think, in a very good way. But
yeah,
like you're saying, Weird World, I'm always very interested about this. How do you set the rules? Like, what are the rules when you're like, I'm in a weird world where ostensibly anything can happen, but you know, in order to have the story progress, it can't be literally anything. So what guidelines did you put for yourself here?
That's a really interesting question, because when Angela and I have this very weird energy when we work together, where like anything that I say and I'm like, she's never going to go for this. Like, she ends up like taking and making it weirder. And, then the same thing happens. So we just like bounce back and forth with each other. I was like, what if they go to hell, but we call it Hecken? What if there's like a demon monster? And they're like, she's like, well, what if it's emo? So it's a lot of, Angela had this idea. So this is like Angela's general, actually it's like four Angela concepts that she had. One day she made a post that was like, should I make this book or this book or this book or this book? And I was like, why not all of these books as one thing? And so most of it is like Angela has an idea and like I find a way to make it work in the world. And then she tells me if it fits into the world. So I think like there's gravity. I think I'm pretty sure that's gravity that's working against him or some force that's like gravity. And I think it's important mostly to have the magic rules right. And one thing that I'm very careful to do in these books is to not talk about the world that much, or not talk about the magic or the rules of physics, because that ruins my ability to fly by the seat of my pants. So usually what happens is we say, we're going to go into this situation. And then what is the weirdest thing that happens? And like, how far can we move this without making people think we break the world? And so we're like, probably if they like just murder someone in cold blood, that's going to break the world and experience. So like, let's pull it back. What if they just make them really, really sad? Or like, what if instead of like actually like noosing up Lucifer Licorice, the townspeople just scream at him and like then they have to run away. And it turns out you can get pretty far in comics by like flighting by the seat of your pants a lot. I mean, you can see all of these books that I've done behind me are kind of well, would it work on Adventure Time? Yes, then we can probably do it here.
It's interesting to hear you say that you're sort of taking her ideas and framing them up. You know, this is anybody listening probably knows this, but I think despite the fact that comics should probably be an art first industry, that's not necessarily how it works.
Right,
it's definitely writing first. So first of all, I love that. I love that you're working that way. But second of all, what is the actual process look like? Is it her giving you the overall frame and then you're writing to that? Is it more Marvel style where you're giving a little bit of an outline and then getting it back into the dialogue? What's the back and forth like in terms of actually creating the book?
So we've been working on this project for about 5 years. And so it's a little hard to remember exactly how we got started. But Angela writes these, she has this webtoon called Detached, and she writes these like kind of smaller vignette stories inside of this big world. And so Angela wanted to kind of, she's since graduated into this big story, but like she wanted to tell like a cohesive narrative across multiple issues. And she had a bunch of ideas how to do this. The Angela Oddling, that comes from her universe called Oddland, where she has all of these weird characters. And it's kind of a very slice of life story. So, so it's a lot of her saying, I really like this weird idea. How can you make it fit? And then I say, like, she had this idea for this demon, this like emo demon who like was really sad about his girlfriend breaking up with him. And I was like, oh, well, like, what if they're the bad guys in issue two? But like, are they really bad guys? And so it's a lot of like, taking the ideas, being like, okay, so the general frame is it's an adventure story. It's kind of like an adventure road trip story, right? Like, so I like to have the frame of this is what we have to do. A thing happens. The main character has to go on a quest to find X. And then it's like roughly every 10 pages, X has to happen. Like, we have to have a turn here. We have to have this thing. And then it's taking that rough framework and saying, what's the weirdest thing you can think of, and try to put all of these obstacles in place that end up moving the story along. So in the first issue, the first thing that we see is Lucifer is not used to being being treated like a monster. And we see that monsters are bad. And so each one of the events that happen, this is really inside baseball, have to inform the story and also turn the narrative in a way that advances the plot and gets people excited to continue for the next 5 to 10 pages. And so you kind of have, because this book is 30, this issue is 36 pages, which is really, 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 really long for most comics. You have to just have these little events. And my thinking was, well, what if these, we bring in like just a heavy dose of absurdism into the book? And instead of like having these same events in my dark fantasy worlds, we instead have it in this like kind of kooky, zany Adventure Time world.
Yeah. And by the way, just a little note, nothing is too inside baseball for us. We are 100% inside the baseball. That's what that phrase refers to, right?
Yeah, exactly. You got it right.
Yeah, you're in there.
Inside,
you're like,
the core of the baseball.
Exactly. And it's spinning around. You're like, well, I'm going crazy and getting so dizzy because I'm inside this baseball. So I get it. Anyway, I did want to ask you just sort of to take a step back here. We've had other guests from this group here, but this is being put together by Unlikely Heroes Studios, which is I think the best way of putting it is like a female forward studio. How did you get hooked up with them?
So I am the founding editor of Cthulhu Is Hard to Spell, which is an anthology series that they licensed last year from me, and they put out the first three of the six volumes they're putting out of the books that are already done. So they're taking the three volumes and they're breaking it up into six volumes. And so they put in paperback. And so they put out three volumes. And when they did that, they were like, we kind of want to do another book with you. Do you have anything? And I had given them a lot of pitches. And I said, well, I do have this one book that like we just can't seem to get around because we just don't have the resources to like, Angela's pretty busy now, so she just can't like do this particular book in the way that she wanted to. And I was like, this feels like a Kickstarter book because Kickstarter is built around the premise of like, we want to fund creative projects that wouldn't exist otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so this is very much the kind of book that like we started and we loved And then we got busy and we literally just, I can't draw this book. Like nobody can draw this book but Angela. And so in order to get this book going, we really need to like have the funds to finish issue two and then issue, and then hopefully issue three as well. When Laurie heard this, heard the pitch, and we had done a story for her in Elsewhere volume three, I believe, she's like, I love Angela, like whatever you want to do. And so I gave her this book and she fell in love with it. And like everyone basically who actually reads it falls in love with the series. And so, yeah, like it became pretty easy once I find somebody that I really, really resonate with and that can do good work. Like I pretty much just want to like work with them as often as possible. And luckily, it seems like Laurie feels the same way. And she wanted to get into doing more all ages stuff and more bookstore stuff. And like this is just ended up being the best of all possible worlds because we all three get to work together now.
Awesome. Hey. I love that. To get into the Kickstarter itself, obviously you're going to get the book. If you pledge this, what else can people look forward to?
Pins. I love pins. Like the like there's a pin of each three monster of each of the three main characters. The one I love most is Molly because her thing is slay monsters, which I think is just like a great take on it. And then the other, and then there's a shirt that says "Stop staring at my moobs." And then there is Prince. And
to be clear, the moobs are the ghost-like characters. That's
yes, the main character. One of the main characters is Moober. He's a tea towel ghost, and so it's like him with a rainbow, lines, like movement lines, and it's like in a circle that says "Stop looking at my moobs" right about here. And you can get it in two colors. And then there's a sticker sheet which I love. If you guys have had Unlike the Hero Studios on, you know that they are just an incredible, they are incredible at merch. I mean, they're incredible at books too, but like they are so good at merch that, and I don't do a lot of merch. So if you've been like, why does it, Russell, I love your books, but like, where's your merch? Like Unlike the Hero Studios, like knows how to do merch and they're doing a lot of awesome stuff. Most of them are designed by Angela Odling. And then we have D. Fish, Fish Lee, and a couple of other amazing variant cover artists as well. I believe there's five variant covers plus the A cover.
Awesome. And just because you mentioned that you're looking to do issue two and beyond, whatever, at what point are you at right now in the creation process? Have you finished the first issue or are you still
hoping it's done? Issue one is done. It is ready to send to printers after this campaign. We finished most of the inks, if not all of the inks on issue two. And that's kind of where we sit now. But this issue is done. And we have an outline for issue three. So like it will, and that's the end. So like we will theoretically, like we have everything at least outlined, if not done. And for this campaign, we have everything done.
Love it. Russell, that's so cool. This book is so much fun. I'm very excited for people to check it out. Fingers crossed you get that vaunted comic book club bump and it pushes you over the edge. I don't want to guarantee anything, but it's definitely going to happen and I stake my life on it. So Russell, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great night.
Yeah, congratulations, man.
All right, good seeing
you. Thanks so much.
Bye. Yeah. All right, once again, that is Russell Nualty and the book is Lucifer Licorice. You can check it out right now on Kickstarter, and it is absolutely delightful.
Oh, my God, yeah, so much fun and super creative and also adorable, but, yeah, just the, you know, you talk about art first. I mean, the characters that are in that book are just so much fun to look at, and, you know, speaking of merch, I mean, it'd be fun to get them on T-shirts and different stuff like that. So, yeah, I hope it really does well.
I got to tell you project. What, Pete, I can't stop looking at your moves.
I don't.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books.
Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Know what you mean by that?
All right, it's time for our next section, which is the next section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comment box anywhere you can watch live, except for Twitter, which that just doesn't work for whatever reason. But you can do it anywhere else. So that's all good. Let's talk about what we're drinking tonight while we're waiting for some questions to come in.
Oh, Pete, that's
what
fun.
You drinking? What you drinking?
I got a little beer here, a little, beer action.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, it's a Circle Theory Hazy, First State Brewing Company. Yeah, it's kind of delicious, you know. So
nice. I'll have to check that one out. Brett Macris, aka Stray Bullet, aka Stray Bullies, as I like to call him, he curates a drink for us over the week. This week, he said, "Everybody, make your favorite margarita." I didn't make my favorite margarita, but I made my margarita with stuff that I had around. So it's a Mezcal Grand Marnier margarita. Ooh. With a smoked salt rim, so it feels particularly fancy.
Mm. Yeah, that does seem fancy.
It is pretty fancy. But it's good, and it let me get rid of the Mezcal that I don't like. So now I can go buy the Mezcal that I do like.
Hey, it seems like a win-win right there, buddy. Absolutely. Get rid of liquor you don't like in a way that you do like.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That's what I do with the bodies as well. Let's get a question here. This is from All in the Game. Specifically asking, this was in reference to an earlier question about, do you watch Superman and Lois? I said, I do. I don't know if you do at all, Pete. But All in the Game says, how are you finding season 3? Should it end at season 4 or continue on Max? Pete, I know you're into some of the Arrowverse stuff. Did you ever watch Superman and Lois? I'm honestly just curious.
No. I mean, I watched the old school Terry Hatcher.
Different show. Different show.
Yeah, but that's
okay. Yeah. You should check it out. You like it. Great. It's a legitimately good show. Great Superman. Great Lois Lane. Good romance stuff going on. Plus the teen romance. Will they smooch? Won't they smooch? Who knows? You love that stuff. I will say for me, I'm like an episode or two behind on this season for season 3. But in terms of should it end, well, first of all, in terms of how I'm liking it, the show's really good. I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler here for this season, but the big plot line that they introduced at the beginning is Lois has breast cancer. And they introduce it, not only is it like a very emotionally gut-wrenching story that Bitsy Tulock, who plays Lois, is doing an incredible job with, but it's also, not to be callous about it, but from a story perspective, it's such a smart thing to do. Because it's something Superman can't fight. Like, he can't punch breast cancer. It's something that he doesn't know how to deal with. He loves Lois so much, he just wants her to be better, and he doesn't know what to do about it. And so presenting that sort of challenge to Superman is phenomenal in terms of the drama of the show. It's hard to watch. Tyler Hoechlin, who plays Superman, has been doing an amazing job with that. The teens who play their kids have been doing an amazing job. So overall, really, really good season, really dramatically strong. Again, I'm a couple of episodes behind, but in terms of should it end or season 4 continue on Max? So a little bit of info about that I'll mention. There's a lot of backstory here, but the short version is, which everybody pretty much knows, there's been a lot of behind the scenes changes over at Warner Brothers Discovery that's led to Sons of a Gun, our James Gunn-focused DC podcast, where they're revamping the DC universe. So there's questions about, like, what DC stuff is actually going to continue, what's going to go into this new universe. James Gunn has said that he loves Superman and Lois, but also they're casting Superman Legacy right now. So they're going to move on to a filmic Superman at some point. So that complicates things. On the other end of the spectrum, you got the CW, which has gone through massive changes. It's cut most of its shows. It just announced its new fall schedule, and other than Walker and All American, there are no what you would consider CW shows on the schedule whatsoever. Three shows that
Riverdale.
No more Riverdale.
Oh, God.
No, get me started. Pete, I watched the last episode ever of The Flash today. It felt like the end of an era.
Wow.
Yeah,
did you get choked up?
I actually did a little bit. Like, it was still, I don't know. I was a huge fan. I'm getting very side here. I'm a huge fan of The Flash from back in the day. Season one, phenomenal. Seasons two through three, really, really solid. I watched all the way through this season, and this season, like, I watched the first couple of episodes and haven't necessarily gotten caught up. It's so, I don't know, it just doesn't work anymore. But the last episode, they had some, I can't get into specific spoilers, but there's moments that, like, harkened back to the beginning and the history of the show. Nice. And, like, it got me a little bit, you know?
Because, well, good. I'm glad it ended well. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a solid episode. But my point being, it's all ending, right? The three holdouts, the three things that they haven't announced anything about so far, are Superman and Lois, Gotham Knights, and All-American Homecoming. Those are the three shows. I was at the CW scheduling conference the other day where the head of programming for the network was talking about their decisions. There's some Q&A afterwards. And he said some interesting things specifically about Superman and Lois, where it seems to me, he didn't say this explicitly, but it seems to me that they love the show creatively. It's a strong show. Of course they want a Superman show on their network. But it seems like the one big holdup for them is that after the season airs, all of the streaming rights go to what was formerly HBO Max, is now, as of today, Max. And they want that because they're like, why would we broadcast this show and then we get none of the money and none of the eyeballs afterwards? Right. That it raises questions about, like, the same thing happens in All American. That goes to Netflix afterwards. Walker goes to Max. So why isn't there an issue there? So I'm sure there's some more complicated things, but that seems to be the sticking point. So this is a very long way of saying that I think the CW wants it to continue. And I think they eventually are going to give because they're not in the bargaining position here. And I do feel mildly confident that we're going to get a fourth season of Superman and Lois, particularly because they showed a reel of the CW's 2023-24 season hyping it up. There were clips of Superman and Lois in there, and the last shot was Superman flying towards the camera. So they're banking on Superman being on the network. Like, I think they're going to do anything to make it happen. On the off chance it doesn't, I do think there's still a good chance that Max will pick it up for a fourth and final season. So this is just all me prognosticating and guessing. There's no inside information or anything, but I do think there's a good chance.
And what would you say your percentage is? You say you're 50% right? Would you say you're 12% right when you call things?
There's
like
been,
this?
We are in a very weird place in terms of the entertainment industry. So any guesses I make are like,
I mean, are we even going to be making television next year?
I don't know. As of the end of next month, there might be no more television ever forever. Who even knows? There's going to be the Screen Actors Guild strike potentially. There might be a Directors Guild strike. Wow. In which case, everything.
Only podcasts. And we don't do any writing on this. So.
Oh, we're in there. We're right in there, Pete.
There's no writing on this show.
Yes. Yes. It's our time. Woo! It's our time up here, is what I like to say. Anyway, yeah.
I feel bad for Justin's day job, but, you know.
It's fine. He doesn't even bother to be here, so fuck him.
Yeah, well, he's trying to put food on the table for his family. You know what I mean?
No, I'm trying to.
What was that, dude?
No, I don't know, man. If you're listening to the audio podcast, I made a really beautiful hand gesture just now.
I don't know if I would say it was beautiful.
It was gorgeous. I think there will be a season four of Superman and Lois. I do think it should be the last season. I think it would be kind of perfect, frankly, if, like, they gave it one more season. That aired in 2024. And then 2025, we get Superman Legacy. And just in terms of Superman, things move over there. But this, apparently the season ends on a cliffhanger. I would love to see them just, like, finish the story that they want to tell, because they've been doing a great job so far. So there you go. Lots of information there, but I think it all ties into the answer. Why don't we see if there are literally any other questions that have popped up while I've been monologuing there. Maybe, maybe not. Okay, we got another one about that. Here we go. This is from Schreikler. Fave types of merch, especially anything that's not usually offered as merch. Great question. I'm going to turn it over right over to you, Pete, because you're the merch guy.
I do love some good merch. I love patches. Remember patches? They're great. I don't know how to sell them on, but I got a soft spot for patches. I also love a good t-shirt, and you know, there's nothing like rocking a tee that you're proud of. You know what I mean? Really kind of make or break your day. You know, it's like a new pair of shoes. Gives you a little pep in the step, a little bob in the stride. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yep, 100%. I know exactly what you mean, and I have no questions.
Great.
I agree with you on the t-shirt. I think t-shirt is probably the best overall one, particularly like if it's a nice, snug, comfortable t-shirt.
Or a good cape. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I love when someone makes a good cape. You know,
I'm not quite with you there, bud. I will say two types of merch that I could do without at this point, and this is only because I get them sent them all the time. Thermoses and tote bags. I'm at the point where I'm like, please stop sending me those. I have so many thermoses. I don't drink that much. And tote bags, like overflowing tote bags all over my apartment at this point. So don't need those. But t-shirts good. Looking behind me, I'll say this thing that I'm pointing to here. This was a watch for Watchmen that I got at the HBO Watchmen after party at Comic-Con. That was pretty sweet. That's a cool piece of merch. I also have a Superman watch that they sent out for Doomsday Clock that has like the melting, bloody Superman logo thing. Ooh. That's pretty cool as well. So maybe a watch, I would say. Something I don't
get
very
expensive.
Often.
It's a little expensive.
It's a little expensive and I don't wear it, but that's definitely one that I'm like, well, I'm never getting rid of those. Those are sweet.
You can bury me with those.
Yeah, bury me with a million watches. So anybody who comes by my coffin hears a horrible amount of ticking.
Don't open that one. It's ticking.
Oop, that's bam, bam. Let's see. This is Schoikler is asking for spoilers about The Flash. Did it end with Barry waking up, realizing it was all a dream, and trying to explain it to his bedmate, Gorilla Grodd?
Oh, that's
yes,
funny. That's funny.
I wasn't going to say spoilers, but yes, and Gorilla Grodd was actually played by Bob Hope. Not Bob Hope. That's not a real thing.
Bob Hope. You're so old.
The resurrected corpse Bob of Bob Hope.
Hope. What the fuck,
Bob,
man?
Newhart. That's who
Bob
I
Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
Still pretty old.
Yes. Cool. I think that's all. Oh, here we go. Here's a question. Suzanne Plichette. Yes, it was Suzanne Plichette as Gorilla Grodd. And Bob Hope, I'm sticking with that one, as Barry Allen. Well, there you go. That was it for our questions.
Oh, man. Yeah. Alex, let me ask you a question while we got a little time.
Great.
Hey, Alex, how you doing, man?
I'm fine, thanks. Thank you. Hey, Pete.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing?
Man, I'm like this close to losing it, man.
Yeah, I'm all right. The weather was pretty nice today.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Times. Yeah. And that's it for your audience question.
Hey, all right. We did it.
Folks, we are going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage. Oh,
that seems dangerous. All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, or maybe a charity of your choice, or of course Long John Silver's for some reason. But yeah, it's an opportunity for a answering a few questions and then winning some money.
Yeah, if you're watching live here, just say me, or raise your hand or hand up or anything in the comments, and we will call on you, and you'll basically be handed $25. That's pretty much how this works.
Yeah, for spending money on comics online.
David Acevedo says, I do like Hush Puppies. I think he's gunning for the Long John Silver's.
Ooh,
David,
smart.
If you want to do it, it is yours to do. I'll tell you what, let's assume David Acevedo is doing it.
That's right. He did a bit. That's almost like volunteering. That's it's good enough for me. Good
All
enough
right.
for
Take
bits
away,
count.
Pete. Bits count.
Bits count. All right, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Today's trivia is on.
Said that.
I know. I was stretching too much. Apologies for repeating myself, Zelbin. Jesus, lighten up, you fucking dick. All right, today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Jim Brown, R.I.P. Please listen to all three options before making
your
selection.
Oh my God. I mean, never mind.
You got
You're not doing Ray Stevenson?
Eventually, yes. But, you know, you got to kind of go in order a little bit. You know what I mean?
Jesus. All right. All right, Pete.
Ray's next week. Way to blow it, you fuck. Jesus Christ. All right, here we go. Here we go. David, sorry to keep you waiting. Here we go. Question number one, David. Who is writing the new Thor book out in August? Hint, it is called The Immortal Thor. Is it A, Al Ewing, B, Donald Blake, or C, Vic Wilson? Only one of those is a good answer and could possibly...
It, what was the first one?
You mean the correct answer? It's Al Ewing is it is.
All right, yeah, I just answered for David one. Because it's not... Oh, David said it. David is playing. There we go. He got it right. Let's get the second question.
Here we go. Question number two. DC is coming out with a crazy-ish in August called the blank. Is it A, Norse Illustrated Swimsuit Issue, B, First Chuck Norris, or C, Charles Bronson?
And so, just to be clear, this may or may not be the answer, but it's Gnort's Illustrated Swimsuit Issue.
That's the correct way to pronounce it. Thank you.
No, but it's very funny. Gnort's. It made me laugh out loud when I saw it. Yeah.
Sports Illustrated. It's Gnort's Illustrated. That's
a good pun.
It's a quality pun that I was murdering. All right. Again, don't overthink this, Dave. You just want to say A here so we can move on. That would be great.
Oh, God, he said C. What happens? What do we do?
Well, it was close. It was close. I appreciate the fact that he acknowledges that Charles Bronson was the first Chuck Norris before Chuck Norris blew up on the scene. So I appreciate him calling out, being supportive of me and my choices there, my comedy choices. All right, let's move on. Since he is corrected, it is A. And we're both looking forward to that crazy issue. Here we go. Last one. Also out in August is Boom Studios comic called The Blank. And I'm sure Zelbin is excited about this comic. Is it A, Buffy the Last Vampire Slayer? Is it B, Buffy's second to last vampire slaying? Or is it C, Telly Savalas? So which one of those do you think that is, David?
I am really excited about that Telly Savalas comic book.
Oh, my God. You imagine what that's going to be like.
You know that comes packaged with a little lollipop.
Why wouldn't it?
Like, yeah, right?
I mean, that's just marketing genius right
there.
That's
marketing 101 is what
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's A. Oh, just wait.
Yeah, it is A. Just waiting for David there. But let's just say he said A. And congrats. Nice job, David. Thank you for somewhat participating in this. I really appreciate it.
Amazing. Dave, email us comicbookclublive@gmail.com and you're going to get a gift certificate to your choice, Long John Silver's or Midtown Comics. Either way, if you want those hush puppies, you can have them. We absolutely will send them to you.
That's right.
David says, I'm talking to my wife. Ooh, he's probably consulting whether they want Long John Silver's or...
Yeah. Or maybe she's like, what the fuck are you doing with your time? And he was like, hey, listen,
I'm trying to get us dinner.
Yeah.
Who's your tribute to, Pete? Who's the tribute to?
I'm talking about, of course, the 1967 hit, The Dirty Dozen.
Of course.
Yep.
Now, I'm going to be picking up a dirty dozen of comic books this week because there's so many good things that are coming out. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to picking up a baker's dozen of comic books, but the one that I'm very excited for is City Boy number one, the old Greggy Pocky.
Yep, absolutely. That's great. That is actually out today, and it follows a... guy who could kind of sense lost things throughout Gotham City. It's spinning out of a story that was in the Lazarus Planet issue. Great stuff. Excited to talk about that. Bunch of stuff I was excited about that is coming out this week. Really interested to check out Terror War number 2 from Image Comics. That's by Saladin Ahmed. First issue was this great satirical near future or far future maybe thing about people who are fighting these gigantic fears, terrors in a city. Very fun, absolutely wild premise. Really enjoyed that. And what was the other thing?
What was the other one you were looking
for? The other one I was very nervous about reading that I'm curious to talk to you about. All Eight Eyes. I can't Don't even die. Say it. There's spiders crawling out of my mouth. All Eight Eyes number two. It is so this creepy. Crazy horror movie thing about giant spiders in New York City in the late 90s. I have arachnophobia. It is very upsetting to read that book, but it's really well done. So excited to talk about it. We're going to talk about all those books and many, many more.
Hey, just real quick, David is looking forward to Scrapper out by Image.
I don't know what that is. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Very exciting. If all those books, except for Scrapper, are going to be in our Stack podcast that comes out Wednesdays, 9 a.m. in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Jeff Mose and Patrick Hernandez for coming on to talk about Spiderweb. Also, Russell Nalty for Lucifer Licorice. Check that out.
Yeah.
Next week, Logan Rogers is going to be here to talk about Tales from the Cloakroom Volume 2. Don't know if you heard, but Volume 1, we had back on the show a while back, got nominated for an Eisner Award, one of the stories. Ooh. So should be excited to talk to him about that. Also, Jorge Molina is going to be here to talk about his Zoop collection, Zerdo's The Art of Jorge Molina, appropriately named. Couple of other things to plug. Sons of a Gun, our DC-focused podcast. We're doing a bunch of new stuff, bunch of recap stuff, revisits, rewatches, rereads, things like that. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We're gearing up for Secret Invasion. And in the meantime, we're doing a bunch of new stuff coming out there. Riverdale After Dark, or Riverdale podcast every week. Ooh, we are halfway through the final season of Riverdale.
Oh, man. Things Can't believe up, it's man. Coming. Oh, it's going to be so sad.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe and follow on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram or TikTok, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, good night.
Hey, thanks for showing up, Justin. We appreciate it.
We have to check a line. We have to check a line on the scout. Bye.